big, because it takes, I mean, even things that I had planted a while ago, they're still not up. Like, it just takes a while for everything to warm up there.
Look, wow. Those guys got it. Not all of them got it, but some of them got taken out. And I think that's a function of diversity, you know? Like, I don't want those guys anymore. I mean, you know, they didn't handle the frost, but why is it that those ones, you know, took a hit and the guys next door are all right? There must be some genetics to frost tolerance. And that's why we like Alverjon and Abas, because they don't care if it freezes or not. These guys do, you know. Some of the corn, same thing. Look at some of the corn. You know, most of it is all right. So I'm happy with that, you know. But some of it, you can see, like this little guy took a hit. This guy had a hard time right here, you know. But he survived, so that's learning. They're all learning, you know, and that's what's important. That they learn how to survive out here, especially with all this stuff that's going on in the world.
Can you explain? Wow, your mine don't look like that. Mine are like this big, like the leaves are big. This is the biggest they get, those leaves.
Which ones?
The what you call them?
The quelites?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I let them go. No, they're all gonna, you see, I leave them so they'll go to seed, and eventually this will just be a perennial edible landscape. You know, I could just expect that I'll come out here and there'll be quelites. And that's good. Look at these are lentejas. I've never planted lentejas before. Then I got to figure out how, you know, I got to thin them. I got to figure out what their whole trip is. But lentejas used to be a staple around here. Lentejas and garbanzos. You know, in 1821, they did a survey of the area, and they found out, you know, that people were growing a lot of lentejas, a lot of garbanzos in the Santa Cruz area. Uh-huh. And you know, the historians think that's from Chamita all the way to San Ildefonso Pueblo. But, you know, and then when I did my research, you know, starting, 8 years ago, and asking all the people, everyone remembered lentejas, garbanzos, but they're not so easy to find in people's toolboxes of seeds. Uh-huh. So this is, I don't know, that's my neck, that's why I'm going back to school. why do crops persist and why do they not?
You think it's from persistence, or do you think it's a cultural shift, like from outside influences coming in and saying not this food? Or
well, I think it's a combination of things. Like, I think, you know, corn and beans, you know, are very giving. You know, they'll give you crops no matter what. They're easy to clean. You know, you could turn a field of corn into beans, into food like that. Well, not like that, but, you know, it's a relatively easy process. And I think crops like garbanzos and lentejas require a little more attention, require a little more processing time, processing skill, you know. So like everything, I think it's a combination of factors. It's like the bees. Everyone's talking about the bees. Mm-hmm. You know, what is it? Is it cell phones? Is it genetic modified pollen? You know, is it the mites? And I just talked to this bee guy, and he said it's all that and more. He said the way we're raising bees is a lot, you know, a lot of these, the way bees are being raised, you know, they have to make that size a honeycomb. It's a plastic template, so the bees are forced to make a honeycomb that size. But if you look at what bees like to do, some honeycombs they might like to make big for storage, some they like to make medium size for the drones, some they like to make small for the worker bees. So bees have an idea of how to make different size combs.
Right.
But with the way we're raising bees, the only thing we're thinking about is how much honey can we get out of this system. You know, we're not thinking, well, what about the bees? What do they like? Or what else do they do? So this beekeeper that I was talking with said, you know, first of all, the bees are stressed out because they're not allowed to make the honeycombs the size in the way they want. Mm. So then that makes them vulnerable to all this other stuff. So it's all that, you know. The question is, the answer is not either or, it's both, you know.
So is there a difference with the natural, like the people that let the bees create their own? I mean, are people letting bees? I don't know. I've never seen a bee hive, so I don't.
Well, all the bees are, you know, the bees that we're used to are the imported bees. Mm-hmm. You know, they're from Europe, they're from Russia, they're from Africa. And they make honey, and that's their focus, you know. Whereas, and we need them here because, as we also know, all the fruit trees are imports. So if they wouldn't have brought bees to pollinate all these fruit trees, then we would have a pollination problem. Because chances are good that the native bees, which do not hive and make honey and do all of this stuff, swarm, that they probably would not have it within their abilities to pollinate all of these trees to the level that we're used to. You know, for example, what I understand is in the almond production, they need 2 million beehives to pollinate all the almonds. And because of what's going on with the bees, we've seen a decline in beehives. We only have 2.5 million beehives in this country. So that means, you know, what is that, 80%? 80% of all the beehives in this country, in order to pollinate the almonds, need to be where the almonds are at when the almonds are flowering, and that's just not happening. So we're going to see a decline in almonds, and with that, we're going to see a decline in almonds, and we're going to see a price going up in almonds, and we're probably going to see that across the board with everything that needs pollination, because the bees are taking a hit from all of these factors. And you're going to see all kinds of information, conflicting information. You're going to see all kinds of funds probably going towards to say, oh, no, it's not GMO pollen. It's not cell phones. It's not all of this stuff. It's some other thing, you know. They're going to come up with some kind of story to calm us down, those of us who might otherwise terminate our contract with Verizon or whoever, you know. They'd want to calm us down so we don't, you know, get overly concerned about the bees. And now I hear that they're doing some nanotech robot or something that'll do pollination. So instead of solving the problem at the source, you know, they're going to create some other grandiose technology to try and get us out of this mess. But the thing is I feel like we're at the end of technology's rope, you know, and we're coming to a realization that nature's technology is the technology that we need to be paying attention to. You know, all this other fancy stuff, man-created stuff, is just creating a bunch of problems. In fact, I just read something else about all the electromagnetic radiation from all these cell phones that, you know, by the middle of this century, every person on this planet is going to have to deal with cancer multiple times. You know, so is that something we're going to accept? Are we going to say, oh, well, that's just how life is now in the 21st century. I'm going to have to battle cancer 3 or 4 times, you know, and it's probably going to kill me because I have to be accessible by my cell phone constantly. Right? So is that the trade-off of where are we? Is that what we want as a society? And then, you know, of course, people are so uninformed, you know, then they're going to fall victim to these other reports of some scientist who ultimately got funding from the cell phone lobby group to come up with research that says, oh, you know, actually electromagnetic radiation is good for you. You know, it improved, we found it improves rats' brain function, you know, and so actually talk on your cell phone more, you know. And when you're not using your cell phone, you can use it to boil your eggs. Now in my soil, because we need shade, I'm like, forget that, trees give shade. You know, I did that because I love her, but, you know, she's going to have to, like, snap. We're going to have to work more as a unit on this. You know, but like this is fine because it gets sun in the morning and then boom. And then it just gets some sun in the afternoon, but then these rocks are creating shade. So this is a perfect environment for these kinds of things, right? And I don't have to buy anything. I don't have to do any funky kind of management.
What do you have planted in here?
Lettuce.
Oh.
Lettuce. All right. But, you know, I transplanted this tomato in there. She looks happy. She looks happy. She looks, I look at this cucumber right there. See? I'm, wow. I consider myself more of an artist than a farmer or a gardener. And these guys are my paints. This tierra is my canvas.
This is good.
Yeah, it's going to be beautiful. This is going to fan out like this, and then it's going to go where it wants. And then there's this one here, see? And this one is getting shade, but then the sun's going to come out, but then this is going to shade it again. And if it doesn't like it, it can move. It's smart. These plants are smart. If they can go right or left, they're going to go where it's better for them. So, you know, that's the opportunity I gave all these guys. Look at them. There's these cucumbers and those tomatoes. And again, and broccoli, wimps, you know. To me, broccoli's not, I mean, I'm into it, but not like, you know, I'm not shaped, I'm just doing it because I'm in love, you know. I got to do it for my babe, but.
Do you have to put shade cloth over it? Because my beets and my broccoli did fine.
Yeah, but see, you're way up north.
That's true, no?
See?
Yeah.
These guys like it cold. They don't mind it cold. They like it shady. Yeah. They don't want to be pummeled by the sun. And that's another thing we need to think about. None of these plants want to be pummeled by the sun. And now the atmosphere is thinning. So UV radiation, anybody who works outside will tell you, hey, it's harder to work outside in the day now than it was even 5 years ago. Because se pica el sol, you can feel it. It almost feels like pins and needles. You know, if it's a clear day, that sun is just like, you know, and it's on you. And think of the plants. Same thing with the plants. You know, they shut down. They don't want it hot. The corn actually goes to sleep like between, you know, noon and 3. In the hottest part of the day, you can see the corn, you know, crashing out because it's too hot. And now, you know, it's getting hotter. You know, the sun is getting more intense, UV, with all this climate change. If we don't teach these crops, right, you know, something like a freeze, something like, you know, a drastic event that thins out my field can be looked at as a disaster or a failure. But from my perspective, it's weeding out the weak. Survival of the fittest, right? You know, if we believe that. And so that's what's happening. You know, if I lose my corn, every year this corn is understanding. And I'm rotating them through. I'm thinking, okay, this year, you know, it's white corn. Next year, I already know it's going to be yellow corn or sweet corn. Last year, it was blue corn. And rotating these crops through the growing season. And if I had more land, if I had more time, you know, I would be planting fields all over. I'd be growing all of these corns at once. All of these beans. So everybody can learn that this is just how it is now. You know, life is getting harder. And if we don't teach them that, and they don't know that, then in 10 years when we say, oh, the food system's collapsed, you know, it turns out that the food corporations can't feed us, that they're not adaptable to climate change. There is no technology fix or gene for drought tolerance or gene for, you know, some insertion that's going to save us from all this. We have to go back to what our ancestors did, seed saving. And then lo and behold, you put your last handful of seeds in the ground and all the seeds are like, oh my God, there's 10 times as much UV radiation. I can't handle this. And that's it. That's how famines are going to happen on this planet. And I see it coming. You know, and I'm just saying, okay, let's get the seeds. An elder told me, gather your people and plant the fields. That's the solution. Don't try and figure out all of the technicalities of the problem. You'll go crazy. He said, just work on the solution. The solution is gather your people and plant the fields, period. And that's what I've been trying to do ever since. You know? And it's working. I'm very impressed with these crops. I'm growing a corn that I water once. You know, I'm growing beans that can get by on one irrigation, you know, and what's coming. This is all, there's always enough. You know, Mother Nature always provides, but we got to meet her halfway. You know, we're not meeting her halfway nowadays. You know, before, everyone used to meet her halfway. Everyone was working it. You know, everyone was working the land, and there was always enough. I've even talked to elders to say, you know, don't count your food. Don't count your yields. Don't count your tortillas. Because there's always enough. And once you start counting it and putting that type of value on it, then you run out. But that's a philosophy of people who work together and people who work the land and have survived in the desert for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And now we live in a society where everybody thinks everything is available all the time and should be available all the time just because I have the money to pay for it. But that's not meeting the Mother Earth halfway, you know. She doesn't want to give us a tomato in the winter. We don't deserve one. I don't care who you are. You know, tomatoes grow when they grow. And if you want them in the winter, then you have to figure out how to pull them when they're green and hang them upside down in the soterrano. Or you got to figure out how to slice them and dry them and have them, you know. And do it within the means of the Mother Earth with your ingenuity and with respect. And now people say, oh, I'll just go buy a 4-pack of tomatoes. It doesn't matter if it's January or July. You know, the only difference is maybe it's 80 more cents in January. You know, but look at that environmental cost. It's insane of what we're doing to this planet. And everyone's talking about, oh, climate change. You know, you hear it on the news. But it's business as usual, man. There's like no adaptation of this society. We are so wasteful, and it's even getting more wasteful. You know, like I'm thinking of all the road equipment that's out there. All this focus on the roads. You know, how many billions of dollars are they spending on the roads, and they're still extracting asphalt, and they're still moving all this gravel, and they're still doing all of this stuff. Yo, we're going to run out of gas in 20 years. Let's like figure this out. You know, why are we investing all these millions of dollars and driving all this stuff around when we know it's over? You know? But I guess that's how we are as human beings. You know? We are the so-called most advanced, but we're the most ignorant on this planet. You know, everyone else is living within their means and has respect. You know, except for us human beings, we think we can do anything we want over here just because we can. You know, doesn't mean you should. You know, why isn't anyone asking that question? You know, alternative energy. Yo, we don't need alternative energy. Turn the lights off. It's that simple. You know, we don't need all this electricity. You don't need 4 TVs in the house, all of them on, when there's only 2 people in your house. We have these kinds of things going on in this country. You know, turn off the lights. My great-grandparents didn't have lights. And they were never hungry. And they were happy. They had time for each other. They were visiting each other. You know? And now we're caught up in this. It's a circus is what it is. It's a tragic circus. It's a neurotic flock of humans.
Can you explain what the seed companies, how their relationship with farmers and what they make, you know, just the whole, their relationship with all of us, actually. Could you explain that? Like how the seed companies work and how they are?
Yeah, but pause.
Is that cool? Because if she's using it up here, then whatever's coming, she uses it, right? So I can still. Well, I'm getting there. Area to see what is the water there.